Good morning, Honorable Chair.
Okay.
Yes, very well, thank you, Chair. How are you?
No good. Are your teams ready?
We should be ready. Let me just check that we are all here. Yes, the team is here. Got Jan, Penny on the call, as well as Adil. Yep, I think we're all here, Chair. Thank
Great.
You.
Great stuff. Thank you so much. Peter Paul. Peter Paul.
Yes, Chair.
How is our team?
Chair, on our side, I've seen Honorable Sopo Sengwe, Honorable Mente, Honorable Singh, and Honorable Miolwa. So, in total, there's about five of you at the moment. I'm sure expecting a few more in the next few seconds.
Okay. Can you check the waiting group? Can you check the waiting group?
Yes, Chair.
Okay. Well, colleagues, can we start with the meeting? Peter Paul?
Yes, Chair.
Yeah. The time now is 9:02. Can we start with the meeting? Today's meeting is the meeting where the Auditor General is to provide us with a brief on how have they fared in as far as the PFMA audits. We know that they've been involved in a very tough environment as a result of the current effects of the pandemic, the time affected, the extensions, the submissions of such financials. They had to pull hard and fast with their team, and I'm sure they will give us a full brief of their own experience and as well the actual report of such audits. As Parliament, we ought to lead the way in terms of assessing how they themselves, under such difficult conditions, had to arrive at determination on a number of audits as per the submissions made by the auditees. Are there any apologies that we need to note, Paul?
Chair, no, not at this point. We do not have any apologies to register for the record.
No apologies at this point, Jim. Someone is still a background. Hello?
Yeah, I was trying to just record the apology for Honorable Patricia Kopane, and she had asked me to convey her apology for the meeting. She's busy with some other engagements in her province, please. Thank you.
That's not how we do things. She ought to know that they ought to submit an apology in writing and that presented to us. That's acceptable practice. Can you start with the meeting?
Chairperson, sorry, Singh here. Good morning to you and everybody.
Morning.
Yeah, I'd just like to know perhaps how long you think the meeting would be scheduled for. You know, we have many plenaries and I'm whipping in one of them. So at least I'll have some idea of what to do.
This is not going to be a very long meeting. The presentation itself is the highlight by the AG, which might take us not more than an hour, but we have budgeted for 2 hours in terms of our time. That should end by 11 o'clock. But we need to pull it even earlier than that time.
Thank you, Chair.
Okay.
Chair?
Honorable Mente.
Good morning, Chair and Team AG. I'm also register my apology. I'm debating on the first mini plenary, so I will leave around about 10 to 10.
No problem. At that time would have been covered. The AG would have finished her report, but questions from ourselves would be holding the finishing line. Yeah. Thank you so much. AG? Welcome.
Yes, Chair, ready to go.
Welcome, Agent. We have heard members. They have. It's true that there's a string of other parliamentary meetings taking place this morning. We're at your hands, at your mercy. Welcome.
Thank you very much, Chair, and thank you. A good morning to you and to all the honourable members that have made it possible for us to have this engagement. As you know, Chair, we have been hard at work to complete the PFMA cycle, and we relished the opportunity to engage with our oversight committee on the outcomes of our work and to share the experiences that our teams have had as we've completed these audits. My intention today is to give you a sense of our experiences on the one hand, but also a sense of the nature of the findings and therefore the messages that we are wanting to communicate arising from our work. As is our tradition, we are making sure that we engage with all the relevant members of the administration, the leadership in the executive, as well as with Parliament. And we're doing that throughout both provincial government and national government. We have not yet completed all of those engagements. We've substantially done them. And as a result, we will only be taking this report at the end of the month, by which time we would have seen everybody that we need. So just that context that we are still, this is part of our engagement with key stakeholders on the outcomes of our work. The 2020 outcomes, in thinking about them, it's useful to go back and remind the honourable members on what we said at the end of our 2018-19 audit. When we finished that PFMA cycle, we had a message that talked about the importance of preventative controls, and we raised the flag and encouraged all players in the public finance management system to act on accountability. We said, let's instill the key preventative controls that will make it possible for us to create space for very little deviation from what we expect and stem losses and ensure that our systems are on a continued path of improvement in terms of delivery and in terms of the preservation of gas resources. And in that regard, we also talked about the importance of these preventative controls being implemented by accounting officers, overseen and supported by executive authorities, and all of that being monitored on an ongoing basis by oversight. We also launched the preventative control guide to support all of the players in implementing these preventative controls that we have spoken about. At the end of 2018-19, we talked about the importance of consequence management where there are failures. And we also raised that urgent attention needed to be paid to the implementation of the basic controls for effective financial management so that we would have greater assurance that the resources that are being entrusted in the hands of different stewards across government were indeed being deployed towards the purpose as intended. In those engagements, we were encouraged by the enthusiasm of not just the executive authorities, but also the oversight mechanisms across government. And we took that as inspiration that there were major opportunities for progressive and sustainable change to take place. The 1920 orders themselves, honourable members, were conducted, as the chair said, under the most difficult circumstances, not only because of the COVID-19 pandemic and its attendant pressures in terms of how operations ran, but because of lockdown, the submission period was extended by 2 months, so we had to then conduct the audit in a cycle that was different from what we're used to. And the time frames quite considerably. And of course, the difficulties of operating in the world of social distancing and in the world where there are disruptions in the course of conducting work, where there are risks to the health of auditors or audites, it resulted in some of the delays in completing our audits. And also in this year, we also conducted the COVID-19 audits on the relief fund, those special audits that we've reported on through Special Report Number 1 and Special Report Number 2. So all of that created a significant pressure for the audit team, and I am phenomenally proud of our teams because they've been able to withstand the pressure and demonstrate the most impressive level of courage and resilience in completing this work. And credit goes not just to the teams at the Office of the AP, but also the teams at the ODT, because they have also partnered with us and also been adaptable and found different ways of working in a time when we needed to. So hopefully the lessons that we've all learned, we will embrace going into the future and improve the efficiency of what we do going forward. Key messages for the 1920 audit, honourable members. The headline is that we are worried that our messages, our call for action, were simply not heeded adequately. We've seen some slight improvement in the outcomes. However, we caution that there is no evidence that there are sustainable improvements at hand. There is no evidence that there is progress, meaningful progress, in building the preventative controls that will strengthen the systems of...
Sorry,
yes, Ted?
AJ? Yeah, we seem to be losing you in some instances. I don't know what is happening. If they can choose a correct site for accessibility, it would be good. You can. I don't know what's happening. Continue.
Okay. Okay, I'll continue, and then let's see if somebody can help me. I might have to relocate. But we'll continue in as far as you can hear me. I was making the point that the controls around preventative measures are not in place yet. Whether you're talking about IT controls or about the diligence on record keeping or even about the audit action plans that are created at the end of our audit, we're not seeing that those audit action plans are implemented with the diligence that's required if we are to drive improvements on a sustainable basis. We're still continuing to see weaknesses on a widespread basis on the basic internal controls movement environment. And this is so necessary if we're going to stem the tide around leakages of public resources. We're concerned about the level of assurance that's being provided by senior managers and by accounting officers. And in that group, I would also include the CFOs, the internal audit function, as well as the audit committee. We've got to galvanize all of those activities in those different functions so that we do drive the improvements that are required. Because if we don't deal with that, we're not going to get the benefits associated with the improvements we're seeing on oversight and the improvements that we're seeing in the level of engagement by executive authorities. And we're also not going to see the improvements that should come because we're seeing the coordinating departments, the provincial treasuries, the national treasury, the offices of the premier in different provinces actually playing a bigger role. So what I'm saying is that we're seeing coordinating departments playing an improving role. We're seeing greater improvements in the level of assurance provided by executive authorities as well as by oversight. The key weakness remains at what happens at institutional level. Chair, I'm hoping that the matters around connectivity are better now.
It has improved quite fine, AG.
Okay, thank you.
Yeah.
Thank you. The audit outcomes, if we look at those, we see more clean audits, so an improvement by 13. So 13 more clean audits than we had before, and we had 173 unqualified audits. Still a high number of disclaimers, 18 auditees. And as you see from the slide, the blue on the extreme right-hand side of those bubbles is the number of audits that were outstanding at the time that we started our analysis. So we had to cut off as at the end of November in terms of our internal analysis, but we continued to work on the audits. But that's the picture in terms of the number of clean audits and the journey around the number of unqualified with findings. The number of clean audits is increasing indeed. And the number of those audits represent 17% of the expenditure budget that's entrusted within the sphere. So 17% is of the budget is what is represented by the audits that have been able to attend clean audits. And if you look at the same story around unqualified audits and combine the 40% and the 17%, what we're saying is that only 57% of the expenditure budget was in the hands of audits that were able to prepare credible financial information by the end of the audit process. A look at where the improvements were. So we had a total of 66 improvements in different areas. And we've analyzed what it is that goes right. How do we get to these improvements and what can we learn in terms of what makes improvements possible? One of the key features, honourable members, is that the accounting officers, the CFOs, the supply chain management, those roles are filled, so the vacancies are dealt with, and there is stability in those roles. What we are saying is that where you have an auditee that enjoys stability at those key management levels, that's where it is possible to attain a clean audit. And importantly, that's where it is possible to retain a clean audit. So our message about the correlation, the direct correlation between stability at management level and clean administration, effective administration, that message remains appropriate. And our analysis this year has reconfirmed it when we've looked at what is it that drives improvement and also what is it results in stagnation and regression. Where there's instability in those key roles, we see things going the wrong direction. The number of clean audits, the number of outstanding audits, we had the 10% of audits uncompleted at the end of November. Since then, we've completed another 30 audits, and we've analyzed those outcomes. And if we compare those outcomes to the picture I've just shared, it doesn't change significantly. So we will continue to talk about the outcomes based on the picture that was on the previous slide. So the audits that we completed subsequently, those were the outcomes. Very few clean audits, majority of audits sitting in the unqualified with finding zone, some qualified and a number that are disclaimer audits. The reason that we still have 14 audits uncompleted, even at the present time, is about the financial statements that are either not submitted or are submitted very late, or where there are delays in terms of the audit process. So we'll continue to pursue, in as far as possible, the completion of the outstanding audit. I share with you in a very high level the messages around the provinces. So we've done a deep dive into each of the provinces. And our key message here, honorable members, is that we're seeing a slow uptick in terms of the number of improvements in the different provinces. So each of the provinces has had a small increase in the number of clean orders, a small increase in improvements. But so save for Gauteng, where there was a net regression, and the Western Cape, where there was a net regression. However, the Western Cape retains its track record as the place where there are the highest number of clean audits. So the picture at the provincial level isn't really true. You'll see a slight improvement in terms of the colors and the number of clean audits, but in substance, we are still cautioning that the key controls that ought to be in place that would give comfort that we are genuinely on a sustainable journey of improvement, those controls are not in place. And as a result of this slow movement and these slight improvements without the sustainable changes, the consequence is that the financial health of different audits across provinces is being compromised. And so one of the key messages we've included in our report is the one that elevates the risk of financial health, especially in the Department of Education and Health across different provinces. And I'll talk a little bit more about that in a later slide. Honorable Chair, in the questions, if there are specific issues around provinces, I'm happy to deal with those. At this point, I'd like to move on to some highlights around the quality of financial statements that were ultimately published. At the end of the audit process, a combination of the audits that we looked at had 74% of them publishing credible financial statements. However, a closer look confirms that at the beginning of the audit process, less than 50%, specifically 49% of audits submitted financials that did not have material mistakes, meaning, therefore, that 25% of audits used the audit process to correct their mistakes. That's all good and well because we get to credible financial statements at the end of the audit process. However, it does raise some important questions about the stability of the financial reporting mechanisms within an environment. And if we are unable to deal with those basic disciplines that allow those that run different entities in government to manage cash flows, to manage resources during the year, we're going to have ongoing problems around financial health. And if we are unable to deal with the basic disciplines of making sure that everybody in the chain, internal audit, audit committee, CFOs, senior managers, review financial information, perform the key reconciliations, and are vigilant around maintaining proper records, we're not going to see improvements in this area. We've shared some insights on the areas of the material misstatements that we're picking up, and they are pretty much the same as what we've seen in prior years. And the impact of all of these disciplines not being in place is directly linked to the financial health deterioration over time. And the numbers that we have demonstrate that out of the expenditure budget, there are far too many audits that do not have financial health indicators as problems, that don't have an indication of problems around financial health. There are far too many of them. 2% of the audits were looked at didn't have financial information that was reliable enough for us to look at financial health. 12% of the audits themselves indicated in their own reports that they are concerned about their own financial health. And 66% of audits had some or other indicator of financial strain. And this was at the end of the 1920 financial year, at the beginning of the pressures around the COVID-19 pandemic and the response that needed to be made. So we are still to look at the impact of the past year when we audit the 2021 financial year. Some of the indicators that we look at in terms of financial health, honorable members, include matters around how long it takes to pay creditors. So in so many instances, you find that audits struggle to pay their creditors within the 30 days. And often that's an issue around financial health issues, cash flow constraints. Another indicator that concerns us is where we see that there's a net deficit at the end of the year where the income is less than the expenditure that has been generated through the year. In other respects, we're seeing on the balance sheet side that assets are less than the liabilities at the end of the year. And in the context of departments, we look at the accruals that have been generated at the end of the year, and we compare that to the cash at hand. And we're seeing that there are far too many accruals that will then have to be caught up using the funds for the following year, which will eat into the expenditure budget and the delivery of services for the forthcoming year. One of the key threats we've raised before is around the litigation claims, especially on medical negligence claims, and that is putting a particular burden on a number of audits across provinces. I want to turn now, honourable members, to the unauthorised expenditure reports. In the year that we've audited, we've seen unauthorized expenditure increasing from 1.65 billion rand last year to 18 billion rand this year. A closer look confirmed that the Department of Social Development had 15 billion rand of unauthorized expenditure. And much of that was about the payments for the COVID-19 grants, the special grants that had to be made, so that we were able to assess and confirm was the basis for this uptick in unauthorized expenditure. Having said that, the education sector across many provinces is one that needs some attention, especially on the unauthorized expenditure. So if you look at KZN, if you look at the Eastern Cape, we're seeing the Department of Education there showing up with unauthorized expenditure, which is associated with pressures around the number of employees on their payroll and the budgets that they have available to them. So that does need some attention. In KZN, another source of unauthorized expenditure was the maintenance costs associated with having to fix schools following the storm that damaged a number of schools' infrastructure. On the next two slides, we give you a sense of where the real pressures are, especially around the provincial education and the provincial health departments. And we also share with you the outcomes for each of the provinces. And here, Eastern Cape shows up, especially on education, as does KZN. And these are audits where, for a number of years now, we have been cautioning about the financial health indicators that were suggesting that there were problems. And real financial pressures in each of those departments. Insofar as the Department of Health, we gave you a sense of the outcomes. So most of those departments had qualified audits across the different provinces, with the Eastern Cape and Northwest departments demonstrating high levels of financial health despair. And this is a story that we shared with the honourable members in previous years as well. The financial health pressures that state-owned entities are pretty well documented. Even though we had not yet completed a number of the state-owned entities' audits, TCTA, DNL, Land Bank, SAFCO, IDT, those were completed after the cutoff date. And I'm aware that a number of portfolio committees have been engaging with the outcomes of those audits. The audits that are still in progress are those for Nexa and SAFCO. And I think, again, the problems at SAPO in particular are well documented, especially about the instability at key levels, as well as the financial health pressures there. The annual financial statements for SAA and SA Express remain unsubmitted, so we have not completed those audits. We have completed audits at ARMSCO, DBSA, CEF, SABC, and the 9 subsidiaries in those different groups. And key issues here are about deficits at the end of the year, balance sheet issues in terms of the assets being less than liabilities. And we're also noting that even those audits in a number of instances are reporting about their own concerns of financial health. Although we did not audit Eskom, we do report that Eskom itself had reported a deficit for 20 billion rand at the end of the 2020 financial year, whereas Transnet had reported a profit of 3.9 billion for 2020 financial year. the honourable members of SCOWAG would recall that this is now the first year where we're going to audit Transnet. So the 2021 audit of Transnet will be signed off by the Office of the AG. The audit of Eskom will continue to be signed off by private sector auditors. However, we are deploying a few staff members from our office to work with the auditors that are appointed, so that over time we can get to know the entity better, as well as support those auditors that are appointed and make sure that oversight benefits from the input of the Office of the AG on that audit. Other public entities that don't always hit the radar because of their scale, in that relative to the big ones, these ones are much smaller. But if you look closely, you'll see that there are a number of smaller public entities that are showing signs of distress, and we've been reporting on these for a number of years. So for 6 years now, we've been reporting about financial health pressures at SANRA, at Road Accident Fund, as well as Golden Leopards Resorts in the Northwest. For 5 years now, we've reported on financial health pressures at Autopac, which is part of PRASNA. We've reported on Northwest Development Corporation having financial health issues, Corridor Mining Resources in Limpopo, Maibuya Transport in the Eastern Cape, as well as the TVET College Moteo in the Free State. And that's been a journey of highlighting these issues. And our concern is that if we don't attend to the financial health issues in these smaller public entities, over time, they too will become a drain on the fiscus. So we do need to attend to the financial health of all of these entities right across the country. I turn now to the figures around fruitless and wasteful expenditure. The number has increased very slightly from 2.36 billion rand to 2.39 billion rand. However, I hasten to caution that this number of 2.39 billion rand is likely to be understated, for a number of auditees will qualify on the completeness of their disclosure on fruitless and wasteful expenditure. So if you didn't have those auditees without reliable information, we would be able to confirm a higher number on fruitless and wasteful expenditure. Key contributors to this, we've noted in the bottom of the slide, and we've allocated specific numbers to each of those auditees. Matters that result in fruitless and wasteful expenditure are those that could have been prevented had greater care been taken. Things like penalties and interest to creditors, specifically SARS, overpayments on EPW projects where, because we're not implementing the key controls to confirm that we're not paying more than we should for specific projects, we end up having financial loss incurred in the environment. And there are a number of other similar issues where, had we implemented the key controls to prevent overpayments and to prevent the incurring of interest and penalties, we would not have this level of fruitless and wasteful expenditure. Supply chain management findings, honourable members, remain part of our report, and indeed through our audits, we still find the matters we've reported on before. We still find that employees and political officers conduct business with the state. We still find that suppliers have false declarations. We're still finding that we find limitations in the course of our audits where financial records are not avails to us to confirm the credibility of the transactions that have gone through the bank account. And we're also still finding instances of uncompetitive and unfair procurement processes, whether it's about not finding three quotes, whether it's about not going back to the market to confirm that we're getting the very best price and the very best quality of what we're buying, and rather extending multi-year contracts beyond the allowable period, whether we're even flouting regulations around local content so that we end up awarding bids to people who don't comply with those provisions which are intended to help us rebuild our economy and save South African jobs. And we're also still finding that the preference point system is not being complied with, and we end up appointing bidders that are not the best ones insofar as our own evaluation was concerned. And supply chain management findings are those that result in irregular expenditure. And the figure this year is 54.1 billion rand. Last year, we reported 56.9 billion. This year, we're reporting 54 billion rand. Some of the limitations in terms of confirming whether that number is a fair representation, you have heard before. You've heard us say that in too many instances, we still find auditees whose disclosure of irregular expenditure is incomplete. So we do have some caution on this number by saying that where you've got 28 auditees whose irregular expenditure number has not been confirmed as being complete, you run the risk that 54 billion rand is an understatement. Transnet and Eskom, they have big numbers, and it's prudent for us to make sure that we give you line of sight on those. Transnet, 56.2 billion rand, and Eskom, 11 billion rand for the 1920 financial year. Key contributors to annual irregular expenditure. So much of it sits in the national government because of the scale, KZN and Gauteng. And then we've also drilled down to the specific auditees where there were high numbers for irregular expenditure. The transport departments in KZN, for example, had a big number, and much of that was associated with extensions on the bus contract. So payments that were being made on this contract that had long expired. At the Department of Defense, we found 2.8 billion rand that was paid for employee compensation. At the Department of Health in Gauteng, we also found procurement findings that resulted in irregular expenditure. So we've given some sense of the highest contributors to irregular expenditure as well as the basis for it. One of the key concerns, honorable members, that we have is that whilst irregular expenditure requires the accounting officer to go and investigate the basis for that irregular expenditure and to deal with it, whether to get it written off, condoned, or recover money, those actions are not being taken by accounting officers. And as a result, irregular expenditure continues to grow and accumulate. So the number, the closing balance this year is 262 million rand, which represents irregular expenditure that has not yet been investigated and properly dealt with. On the right-hand side of the slide, we share with you the entities that contribute the highest to the accumulated irregular expenditure. The main point of the slide is to highlight that the call for action that we made around accounting officers dealing with irregular expenditure that's been identified through the audit process, that call has not been heeded. And as a result, we continue to see an accumulation of irregular expenditure across the system. Which brings me then, Honorable Chair, to the material irregularity process. And this is a process that this committee is particularly well-versed in. However, Chair, we are using the moments that we have when we share these outcomes with the executive, with the administration, and with the legislature. We're using the moment to remind all of our audiences why this mechanism is in place, its potential to drive accountability improvements across government, as well as giving them some insight on how we are approaching the implementation of the instrument. This committee would know very well that the instrument is one that is complementary to the oversight system. It's complementary to the role of accounting officers as well as the role of executive authority. Where the accounting officer does what they're supposed to do in terms of law, there's no need for us to step in. We step in if there's failure. Where the executive authorities and oversight ensure that accounting officers do what they're required to do, we don't have to step in. We step in when there is failure. And so our view is that this instrument has the potential to support accounting officers, inspire accounting officers to do what's required, and to actually fulfill their legal obligations as given in Section 38 of the PFMA. So that when we identify material irregularities, we can support the accounting officer by channeling their efforts to deal with the most urgent matters. Out of the irregular expenditure number, we can show them which transactions are posing the biggest risks to their financial resources, to their enterprises, or to the ability of their institutions to deliver. Our notification process also, because we give 20 working days within which an accounting officer ought to indicate what they're going to do with the material irregularity, that notification process can serve to ensure that accounting officers take appropriate actions on a timely basis and take swift actions as provided for in law, which action would include stemming the losses through cancelling contracts, recovering lost funds, reporting matters to law enforcement agencies as it may be required, instilling discipline where officials within the environment have done wrong, and closing the internal controls weaknesses so that the matters do not recur. At every turn, it's important for us to notify the accounting officer, to hold them accountable, and yet to give them space to implement the actions that they're set out to do. So indeed, we're seeing and implementing this as a complementary mechanism. When we talk to accounting officers, part of our message is about ensuring that they understand how this instrument can help them do their job even better, how this instrument can support them in fulfilling their responsibilities as given in law. I'm not going to spend too much time explaining the material irregularity process to this committee because you are fully versed in it. Indeed, we remain as an audit office committed to ensuring that we implement it in the way that has been designed and implemented to the effect that has been intended by the legislators as they trusted us with this instrument. One of the beauties of this instrument, where we have the power to refer matters for investigation, we have the power to recommend issues for the accounting officer to act on and to include that recommendation in an audit report, where we have the power to issue binding remedial action if the accounting officer does not act, and where we have the obligation and the right to issue a certificate of debt where the accounting officer still fails to implement binding remedial action. Those powers we are well on our way towards implementing. The beauty of it is this. Not only do we audit and report at the end of the year, but we can identify material irregularities at any time in the year. We don't have to wait for the following year. And we can follow up on the implementation of our recommendations and of our remedial action during the course of the year, so that we're not leaving things for yet another year before we come back. So no longer will it be that our audit reports sit on a shelf at the end of an audit process and are only pulled out at the beginning of the next year's audit. The material irregularity process is a continuous one. And we've used this process in the journey of the real-time audit, where we're able to demonstrate the real-time impact of the work that we can do. Specifically, in the 1920 financial year, we implemented the MI process at a total of 89 auditees across government, PFMA cycle, that is. We identified a total of 78 MI. This is now at the end of the second year of us implementing these powers. And these 78 MI, we have estimated a financial loss for 5.8 billion rand. And the areas where these material irregularities occur are in procurement, expenditure management, revenue management, and resource management. And these are the same areas that we have highlighted a caution around weak control. So when we look at procurement, the material irregularities relate to overpricing of goods and services that were procured following an unfair or an uncompetitive procurement process. We've also found that in some instances, accounting officers ended up appointing suppliers that did not deliver. And that was as a result of an unfair procurement process. And there were losses associated with those processes. On the expenditure management side, we found instances where there were payments made for goods and services that were either not received or there was poor quality of delivery, and yet there were payments made. We've also found that where invoices or claims are not paid on time, we end up incurring interest or penalty. On the revenue management side, we found instances where revenue is simply not billed, or where debts that have been incurred by others and those people owe us money were not getting it back. On the resource management side, we found issues specifically around safeguarding of assets, where key controls around keeping physical assets safe have failed us, and we end up losing assets and assets which are meant to deliver goods and services to people. Some of the examples that I will share, Honourable Chair, at the Department of Defence, we found a material irregularity associated with lease payments that were made for buildings that were not occupied. 108 million rand of a loss associated with that expenditure. And the key control that would have failed is by ensuring that we do not enter into a lease and then don't ensure that we can move into that building at the appointed time. And we end up paying for a lease that we really don't need. At the time that we issued the material irregularity notification, the accounting officer issued an instruction for an investigation internally to understand how this had come about and to give us a sense of how they're going to take action based on the outcome of that investigation. Our duty now is to follow up as soon as possible with the accounting officer on how they are going about making sure that that investigation is completed swiftly and that the action that's required is taken. In another instance at the Limpopo Roads Agency, we found a particular instance where a construction permit was not obtained for a project before the contractor went on site. And as a result, there were penalties associated with this, and the contractor charged standing time as required by the contract between them and the agency. And that resulted in financial loss. And the key weakness there was really about the discipline that ought to have been undertaken in terms of project management. Based on the outcome of the investigation by the accounting officer in terms of who did what, why it happened, and ensuring that it does not happen again, we will then take the necessary action following that. And so there are some instances where we are giving space for the accounting officer to investigate, to quantify the loss that has been identified, and to ensure that there are disciplinary actions. Because in some instances, the law says we can raise a material irregularity if there is likely financial loss without requiring of us to go and quantify it, but rather to give the accounting officer the opportunity to go and figure out what went wrong, what the substance of the issue is, what the scale of the loss is, and then take the necessary action. The legal obligations of the accounting officers and accounting authorities to address irregularity, whether they are irregular expenditure or material irregularities, those obligations remain in force, and I've spoken to those in an earlier slide. The PAA amendment requires of us to follow up on material irregularities that would have been issued the previous year and to ensure that our new report reports properly on the follow-up mechanism. So at the end of 2018-19 audit, we had identified 39 material irregularities. And at that time, we reported that in 36 instances, accounting officers or authorities were taking action. We also had highlighted recommendations in two audit reports for the accounting officer and the accounting authority to action, and we had referred a matter to the National Treasury, and that was specifically relating to the Department of Health in the Northern Cape. Where we are now, having followed up on the issue, as at the end of 2020 financial year, 24 of those instances we've been able to confirm that there has been appropriate action taken by accounting officers and that this remains in process. So ours is to continue to track it. In some instances, we found that the matter has been closed or resolved, An example would be where the accounting officer has investigated, they've come to a view that there isn't a wrongdoing on the part of a particular official, and they're able to deal with the issue, with the matter. One instance was where an accounting officer got back interest that had been inappropriately paid to a contractor, so that money came back into the business. Six instances, there was a lack of progress by accounting officers, and this resulted in us escalating the matter towards a recommendation, which is included now in the audit report. And the investigation by the National Treasury on the Northern Cape matter remains in process, and one of the recommendations from last year has been already implemented by the accounting officer. In the course of this follow-up, Chair, what we're finding is that this year we had delays around COVID-19 and some concerns about the space we needed to give accounting officers to follow up on matters. But we are finding two limitations that we need to attend to. One is the instability at accounting officer and accounting authority level, where we issue a material regularity and then the accounting officer moves on, and then now we have to pick up the issue with the new accounting officer. The law says that we must then still continue to deal with the new accounting officer. And at that time, for us to be fair to them, we've got to give them the time to engage with the issue properly and then confirm the action that they're going to take. However, we are finding this a disruptive set of circumstances, this level of instability. An example would be at PRASA, where over the last year that we've been tracking an MI from the previous year, there have been a number of different accounting authorities. You had a board, you had an accounting, you had an administrator, then you had another board. And at each instance, you've got to give the new administration an opportunity to engage with the matter and make commitments about how they're going to handle it. We also have a dependence on other public bodies. So matters such as the National Treasury, for example, where the Northern Cape was concerned, we're still waiting for the outcome of that work. And we've got to ensure that we maintain the conversation with them so that they're able to attend to this. There's also the limitation that if a matter is reported to the Hawks, you've then got to wait for the issue to run its course. And in some instances, matters have been referred to the Hawks by accounting authorities, indeed, which is the appropriate action that we would want to have. And matters, in some instances, have been referred to the SIU. The honourable members might recall that in 1819, we had reported on a particular transaction at the Transport Department in the Northwest, relating to a contract for learner-driver interventions. And this contract was issued to someone, and there was a prepayment made, and that money went towards setting the appointed contractor's tax obligations instead of delivering on the project. And so the accounting officer there has now referred the matter to the Hawks for them to go and find this individual and get the money back. But indeed, they have reported the matter to law enforcement as required in law. And as a result, ours is to track it and to await the completion of that journey with the Hawks. We are also using this set of outcomes to drive greater awareness on the process that we're following, to drive greater awareness on the difference between irregular expenditure and material irregularities in terms of not just the definitions, but also the scale of it. If we report 50 billion rand of irregular expenditure, we're not going to report financial loss of 50 billion rand, because the difference here would be that we would have to dig deeper from the 50 billion rand and identify particular transactions where we can find financial loss. And that would then be the difference. And we're also using the opportunity to drive key messages about the potential value of the instrument to demonstrate that we need not wait for the issuing a certificate of debt. The institution that is the Auditor General of South Africa, we will implement these powers without fear, without favor, and without prejudice. And we will make sure that we deliver on the commitment that we've already made to implement these powers. The urgency of the moment, however, if you look at what's required for us to safeguard resources, scarce resources, in the context of growing needs and wants by citizens and growing demand for us to deal with infrastructure, to deal with all manner of service delivery issues, that urgency requires much swifter action by all players. And if we spend more time dealing with one MI, which we will do, we will lose opportunity to deal with the system that creates opportunities for those MIs. So we're using the opportunity to say to accounting officers and executive authorities, as well as oversight, let us all do our part to deal with these things as quickly as possible, to close the gaps on internal control so that we limit the space for these things to arise, so that by the time we get to a point of issuing remedial action, things have been dealt with. Because actually, by the time we issue remedial action and a certificate of debt, it is a confirmation of failure throughout the system. And it is an indication that we're not taking the urgent action that this moment demands from all of us. Chair, I won't take you through the other slides that we take others through, because I think this committee is indeed very well versed in this work. We close off our story around this PFMA cycle by continuing our call for all of us to act with urgency on accountability failures, to urgently deal with issues around preventative controls so that we can close leakages and recover money that's being lost, to ensure that we follow good financial management disciplines and to support state-owned entities as well as the struggling public entities that may be small enough to go under the radar, and to also deal with the capacity and the ability of the key service delivery departments to meet their obligations. We're calling once again for sustainable solutions to be effected so that we prevent accountability failures, so that we can detect them quickly when they do occur and apply swift and effective consequences where that's required. And this all of us must do collaboratively, and we must do with courage, and we must do so on a consistent basis, because that's what this moment of urgency requires. So, Honourable Chair, that is our story for the PFMA cycle, through which I hope I've given you some insight on how we are approaching the implementation of the PAA amendment and where we are on that journey. Thank you very much, Honourable Chair. I hand back to you.
Thank you very much, AG, for the report. I hope that members have caught the gist of the report in terms of the outcomes, the numbers audited, the numbers that failed to make submissions of the financials, the late audits made, and the actual improvements, the drawbacks, and the material regularity audits which are taking place, and the signals thereof. Honourable members, are there any questions to ask or comments from the report? Looking into the hands, two hands that I see. Honourable Sipusengwe, which is Honourable Constance, Honourable Ram Singh, and Honourable Hussein, those three hands so far. Honourable Constance.
Yes, Chairperson, thank you very much. I would like to appreciate the presentation by the AG, which is quite good for us, so that we have an idea of what is happening in the audit. But what I want to raise, Chair, is the concern around payment of companies which take a long time by the department to pay. As a result, it affects especially small business very, very deeply, because most of such companies, they end up in bankrupt. And government is known for that type of attitude of not paying. in 30 days. So I think that's one concern which I have. Now, I also want to ask a question around the KZN on over expenditure to fix schools, especially during around storm times. Is that not part of the budget of the disaster? Why is it an over expenditure? Was it not budgeted for? Because we do have disaster funds. And the third point is, I didn't get to get, maybe I missed the presentation on the Northern Cape that there's an issue. So I just wanted to, AG to reiterate what she was saying about the Northern Cape concern. So those are the three issues which I'm raising. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Honorable. Concerns and one of the things.
Thank you very much, Honorable Chairperson. Firstly, thank you very much to the AG and the team for this presentation. Chairperson, unfortunately, I'll have to leave the link in the next 2 or 3 minutes because Honorable Shlengwa, who was due to speak in the first plenary, is flying back to KZN after we heard of the sad passing of His Majesty King Goodwill Swelithini. So I'm going to have to speak in the debate. But having said that, Chairperson, you know, this report paints a very, very bleak picture of financial management within government departments generally and state-owned enterprises. And I think for us it's just information, but I do know, and perhaps the AG can confirm, that all these individual reports are shared with the ministers, with the premiers, and with the portfolio committee, so that they need to take the action. You know, I always say in this committee, we receive the report, it's lamentation, lamentation, and lamentation. But there seems to be no progress, no progress. You know, corruption has now become an economic activity in our country. And AG, you know, these teams that you belong to, I think we need to meet them, as SCOAC and other portfolio committees, to find out what coordinated effort is there going to be to prevent this kind of poor, inexcusable lack of financial management that we have in our country. I'm not going to go into any specifics, you know, because it's disgraceful that this kind of financial management can occur in our country. And we must be grateful and thankful for having an Office of the Auditor General that can point out all these irregularities, fruitless, wasteful expenditure, etc. So I'll stop at that, Chairperson. Thank you. Thank you, Chairperson.
I think the next person to speak, the head is just missing here. Maybe he's gone. AG, Honorable Hussein, what's happening with you?
Yeah, no, sorry, Chair, with my luck, just before you can call my name, with load shedding, so, but anyway,
okay.
I quickly managed to change to a different network. Chair, may I just say thank you very much to you and to the AG for the report. I'm always impressed with the quality of the reports that we get from the AG's office, and this has been a standard practice for many years. So I want to express our appreciation for the very open and transparent manner in which these things are reported. I want to make one or two short comments, Chair, and just follow up with a question or two. May I say, Chairperson, that when one listens to these reports, and notwithstanding the quality of the information that's provided to us, it's definitely for me, and I'm sure for many others, in a very depressing state of affairs, more especially because year on year, when you see these reports, and every time the AG presents a report, the situation appears to be getting worse over time. And granted, I think that there are some areas of excellence where there is some progress being made, and I mustn't be unfair about that. But, you know, from a bird's eye view, the unfortunate reality is over the years, the situation does seem to be getting worse. And it does point to poor administration, poor financial management, and a growing rate of corruption in the country. Chair, I'll tell you, the situation is never going to get better with better reporting. It's only going to get better when there is going to be better action and accountability taken for those reports. So it's one thing having a brilliant report that points out what the weaknesses are. But what we do with that information thereafter becomes critical, or else we will continue in the situation that we're at, where because of a lack of accountability and consequences, the situation gets worse. People do as they please because they know they can get away with it. And just to use one example, Chairperson, the one thing that I've picked up from this report of 605 false declarations by suppliers, what does that tell you? It tells you that there are suppliers who know, who think that they can get away with it. And in my mind, I question, surely that is a criminal offense, where somebody takes the chance to mislead government in order to be able to secure a contract or a tender or something, and deliberately so. And yet very seldom do we actually hear of the police knocking on some company's door because they've provided false information. That must be a criminal offense. And I just want to hear, and I'm not as familiar with what the consequences of that are for private companies who take those chances. But perhaps maybe the AG can just alert us to what provision in law is there in respect of that. And I'm sure that must be a criminal offense, because if we're not going to start taking action at private companies for the chances that they take, as the famous thing goes, that wherever there is corruption, there is a corruptee and a corrupter, you have to attack it from both ends. And this is one of the core reasons why the situation is getting worse, is because there are also private companies who know that they can get away with these things. The report overall, Chair, I won't go into a number of the details that I think is pointed out to us, but the unauthorized expenditure, irregular expenditure, just seems to be getting worse year on year. And I wanted to raise the question with the AG, Chair, is that I know that we don't expect the AG to be taking action against individuals. That's not their core business. Their core business is to go and look into it and provide the reports. And there are other institutions in our country that must take that information and implement corrective action. But the one thing that I do find, and the AG spent some time explaining on the role of the accounting officers and how important it is for them to do their work. But there are many cases where the accounting officers themselves do nothing. And because they know nothing is going to happen to them, there are no consequences for that. Then they just do as they please. So here you have a report that's presented to the accounting officer to say, these are the areas and of weakness that we found in your institution. These areas point towards poor financial management on the part of these specific officials, and you recommend corrective action. But that accounting officer takes no action thereafter, and the next year the similar thing happens. Is there any monitoring of accounting officers themselves? So to give you an example, a dashboard that says, in this particular instance we found in this last year, these are the areas where there were weaknesses. There were 100 examples of that where the accounting officers should have taken action, and only 10% of them actually acted upon it. Then those accounting officers must also be exposed for not doing the work that they're supposed to be doing. So in short, what I'm trying to say, Chairperson, is that for as long as the institutions and the people in authority who have the power to do something and take action against individuals for misconduct, irregular expenditure, corruption, and so on, the Auditor General can provide the best reports ever. And it will get worse every year. But if we're not going to shift our focus and put more pressure on those institutions that are actually supposed to implement the findings of this, of the Auditor General's report, and take corrective action and hold people accountable, you and I and the rest of this portfolio committee will be seeing this picture every single week for the rest of our lives, for as long as we sit on this portfolio committee. So I'd like to hear the Auditor General's comments on some of the points and the questions that I've raised. Thank you very much, Chairperson.
Thank you very much, Honorable C. Is there any other hand? Absence of any other hand, I'll give over to the AG, noting AG that they have identified through the audit about 116 million rand, which has gone to government employees through contracts in terms of procurement or office bearers. Having identified this lack of control, is there any referral that has been made on these matters, or it still rests with accounting officers to ensure that something is done directly on these matters? Because there's a clear directive on this matter. The second area which I think we should worry ourselves on is the question of non-submission of financial statements for the audit. That we have entities that continue to benefit from the public purse, but they fail to make adequate submissions in terms of financial statements on time for such audits to take place. It's a very concerning matter, which I think we really need to ensure that those who are in authority in such institutions, they must be made to account on such kind of unwarranted action. And the third area relates to what the AG has identified as the contributors on both the areas of wasteful and fruitless expenditure, looking into the amounts involved, the parameters that have forced such, and such instances would require that the accounting officers concerned would have to account on such areas. And notably, some of the areas have been dealt with, which have been identified through the COVID-19 audit, which account for a huge amount in such instances, looking into social development. One last point, which I think we need to advance as a committee, and appreciate what the AG's office is doing, is on the MI activities, where though the process takes its own time, the point which is very critical is to identify where the areas of attention would have to be, and what has been done so far by such accounting officers or executive authorities on those matters, because that's where the actual essence of the review of the Public Audit Act has been, to ensure that this office would push through its own work in identifying some weaknesses, make some people account, and such individuals who ought to be accountable, they ought to show cause for such accountability. And lastly, is the area which is impediment in terms of the AG's office to effect such a material irregularity audits, which she has identified as instability in the highest offices of various entities. And that is a causal factor would create a spiral in as far as the actual resolving of those critical matters which are found to be weaknesses in those areas which have been identified. But I think what we need to appreciate what the AG has reported on in terms of the current audit. Auditor General, your comments on questions and comments made by members.
Thank you very much, Chair, and thank you to the honourable members that have commented on this report so far. Honourable Sepo-Sengwe, indeed the concern about these late payments is something that we've raised for a while now. And until we can sort out the basic disciplines in terms of ensuring that payments are made for goods and services that are received at good quality, at a good price, not only are we going to ensure that we maintain the resources that we need so that we can pay for services that we're procuring and manage our cash flows accordingly, but also we're then going to ensure that these small businesses are able to sustain their activity. The KZN matter on fixing the schools, it wouldn't have been budgeted for in the context of this crisis that arose. The disaster management funds would not have been adequate to deal with this scale of expenditure. However, what we did see in KZN is that there is coordinated effort around responding to this disaster, which has been, I think, quite helpful in driving an effective and swift response to maintaining those schools that were damaged. In the Northern Cape, the point, Honourable Member, the point I was making on the Department of Health was that we had found a number of MIs that really had their root in supply chain management findings, where there was a bid issued to a supplier who really didn't score the highest points, especially on pricing. And when we raised the non-compliance finding, we looked more carefully to see if there was evidence of financial loss. And we found that on this particular contract, the department had overpaid for the service because it issued the contract to this particular service provider. The accounting officer in that instance disagreed with us. They agreed with us on other matters, but on this one they disagreed. So we both agreed that the best arbiter on this one would be the National Treasury. So we needed to make sure that we gave space for the Treasury to look into this. So we've enjoyed cooperation from the National Treasury. The point I was making is that we have not yet completed the journey. The other point I would want to make around the Department of Health in the Northern Cape, which is really what we were saying around instability, is that we were working with a particular accounting officer on this MI and another one as well. And that accounting officer has now shifted, so there's a new one, which is delaying action that's required on some of the matters that we've raised. So we've got to still give the acting accounting officer the space to engage with the matter, become more fair with the facts, and shape their own response to it. Honourable Singh, I'm hearing you say that you'd like to meet the team with whom we're working, and if I understood you correctly, it's really about saying with whom are we collaborating when we hand over these matters, and how can we best find each other so that we can drive greater speed in implementing consequences, and I think that's something we would welcome. Honourable Hussein, I agree with you that we do need to find every way to get those that must act to act. And there's a role for executive authorities, there's a role for oversight. And as we've done before at the Office of the AG, we stand ready to plan with the portfolio committees in Parliament to share insight on what we found and to help them shape their oversight work so that accountability can become a feature arising from all the different reports that we conduct. It's going to be difficult to sit only with the consolidated report. I think the magic will happen when there is the specificity that must happen at portfolio committee level when we deal with specific auditees. Is there an opportunity to hold private companies accountable for matters that arise in these sorts of irregular expenditures and material irregularities? Absolutely, and that's where we've got to get the law enforcement machinery up and running, because the best way to pursue the other side of the transaction is by getting the law enforcement agencies to act on these things. as I've said before in this committee, the experience that we have, we've had in collaborating within the context of the Fusion Center is something we can all learn from and build on going forward. And that's maybe the conversation that Honorable Singh was suggesting. The 116 million rand that went to government employees and public officials, Honorable Chair, yes, that sits with the accounting officer to follow up, because in those contracts we've not found instances of financial loss. We were not able to link that specific transgression to financial loss. If we ever do, the matter will end up with a material irregularity. We raise the issue because accounting officers must act on it, but also I think it sharpens all of our focus on the culture of non-compliance that sits within the system. And it also highlights the need for us to advocate for a different way of doing things, especially around public procurement. The non-submission of financials, I accept the point you're making. The good news is that we've seen higher levels of submissions of financial statements over time. So there are those specific cases that need attention. What we worry about is that, yes, there's submissions, but in far too many instances, the submissions of us are of such poor quality that not only is the audit process painful, it's also unnecessarily costly. And so we need to stem that. But importantly, it's also an indication that the basic controls of managing finances are simply not in place. So when you see an auditee that's got an unqualified audit with findings where they are in that yellow zone, it's good to celebrate that they have credible financial statements. But it's also important to recognize that underneath that are major transgressions and weaknesses and problems that are leading towards diminished capacity to maintain resources. Supply chain findings, procurement issues, contract management issues, quality reporting problems in terms of decision-making during the year. So those auditees in that yellow zone, I think, need more attention than what is given before. There tends to be some comfort in that yellow zone because auditees say, well, at least I have financials that are unqualified. Well, that's one step. Underneath that are major problems that are creating service delivery issues and that are creating leakages of public funds. And those weaknesses need to be attended to urgently. On fruitless and wasteful expenditure, the controls, Honorable Chair, are the ones that we need to deal with so that the disciplines of managing our processes, our cash flows, the discipline of managing our records, all of those things, I think, are going to stand us in good stead so that we can reduce the instances of fruitless and wasteful expenditure. Some of that fruitless and wasteful expenditure has resulted in material irregularity, and some of it hasn't. However, we'll continue to raise the matter with accounting officers for them to attend to in terms of preventing these instances, but also acting quickly so that you can build a culture of less tolerance for fruitless and wasteful expenditure. Insofar as the outcomes of the real-time audits on the COVID relief fund, we are following up on the material irregularities that would have arisen from those audits. So you'll start to see those coming through the process. So we will not wait. We have not waited for the year to end and for us to complete the 2021 financial audits. We will continue to track those MIs and take them through the process that we've mapped out. The good thing is we're starting to see a responsiveness amongst accounting officers. And for that, we're quite pleased. And it gives us some hope that controls will be fixed, that accounting officers will start to embrace their duties as set out in law. And yes, the impediment of instability at key levels makes it difficult to complete the journey on MIs, but importantly, it is compromising the capability of different departments and entities within government. So that does require urgent attention. So thank you very much, Chair. I've responded to the questions and comments as requested.
So thank you very much, AG. taking note of your response on the categorization of the financial statements based on the scale of credibility and the West that have been submitted and those who have leaned towards the process of audit to correct their own financials. If you were to say you can do it now, or probably you can choose to give a time to do so, that from the number of such categories of the standing of the financials from the best to the worst, how many would you categorize as a classification from clean audit up to the disclaimed audits and beyond? Would somewhat want to have created an analogy of what you started to get in terms of the basis of determination, that you can have a credible statement, but within that credible statement, there might be things that are hidden in terms of various items which are somewhat leaning towards some mal practices beneath such a statement. If from time we could have that kind of classification, which would assist to see that kind of benefit, you correct your statements, you end up being classified at the end of that audit as being part of the clean audit outcome audits, or disclaimed, or whatever you thought. We could as well correlate that kind of strength or weakness to the actual outcome which is provided by through the end of the audit. If that is possible, whether now on time, we'll really appreciate that. So we can see that much time must be spent on ensuring that your actual financials are done properly for this kind of the audit. KG?
Yes, Chair. I'm happy for us to provide even more insight on this. What I will say, though, is the fact that only 49% of auditees have credible financial information. That tells you that you've got the bulk of auditees in the PFMA cycle unable to maintain credible financial records during the year. And the financial reporting framework for these entities, especially the department, that framework is not that complex. It really isn't. So it's not about difficult financial reporting requirements. It's just about discipline of maintaining our financial records. So I think that's a problem that we need to attend to. So anyone who doesn't have the ability to give credible financial information at the end of the year needs attention from an oversight point of view. The ones that have unqualified findings, most of those findings are associated with procurement findings. So the majority of those in the yellow zone, and then you can count all of them in the qualified and disclaimer zone as well. But right from unqualified, most of them have procurement findings. And those procurement findings are the matters that result in irregular expenditure, and other matters that result in financial loss. And even if we can't track financial loss for a material irregularity in that it's direct, even if we can't track it and say, well, this non-compliance led to an overpayment in this way. If there's a non-compliance where we've issued a contract to someone who doesn't meet their tax obligations, in that they don't deliver a credible or a valid tax clearance certificate, it means that we are diminishing the capacity of government to collect the taxes that are due. So those findings are just as important as the material irregularity ones. The ones that end up in material irregularity are the ones that need urgent attention so we can stem the direct financial loss. The ones that might not end up in that bucket of MI are still needing attention because we must deal with how we procure so that we can preserve jobs and meet our local content imperatives from a policy point of view. Otherwise, that instrument won't work. Where is the tax compliance matter? We've got to drive the culture of tax compliance, and we've got to make sure that the fiscus gets what it's due, especially in the course of procuring goods and services from suppliers. Those that are about bids that are uncompetitive, if a bid is unfair, we are compromising the ability of institutions of government to demonstrate that citizens can trust that they are serving in their interests, that citizens can trust that they are meeting the objectives set out in Section 217 of the Constitution. So what I'm saying, Chair, is let's not allow anyone to be complacent when they sit in the yellow zone. That's a tricky space. That's the space where there is leakage. Yes, it's not as bad as a disclaimer, but it's actually not that impressive, especially in the PSMA cycle where the financial reporting standards are not that tricky. Some of the public entities report on the basis of IFRS, which is a little bit more complex, and we would have some sympathy for that. But the majority of the 400-plus audits that we completed are for financial reporting standards that are not that complex. So it's about discipline. And if someone can't put together financials, you've got to wonder how they are comfortable that they're able to maintain their resources during the year. So that's my answer.
Well, thank you, AG. Thank you very much for the report. Very, very steep though, because in your size, the fact that only 57% of the budget that could guarantee that South Africans could be happy that is properly accounted for, except for some areas that we need to look into in terms of the yellow zone. So just above 50%, 57%, and the rest is something to worry about. To worry about family, so that the both accounting officers and executive authorities need to dip their minds on how to solve such identified. It's easy because problems are identified. There's problem A, B, C, D, E. Deal with that problem, and therefore we need them to see improvement around that level. So thank you very much, AG, and your team. We hope that you continue to do so in explaining some of these things to various portfolio committees. I know for a fact that in SCOPA, some of the reports have already been handled for various state-owned entities. So your reports are being used as an instrument of accountability in critical areas of creating a standard for performance and accounting for those who handle public best. In this regard, I think we remain happy as a committee that you have not highlighted any further difficulties except for the environment, no matters of security hitches that you have experienced. And that disregard, at least we can be stand firm to say at least your work has been done within an environment which is a bit peaceful but hectic, do you have any other comment before we close, AG?
Thank you, Chair. My only comment would be, yes. Thank you. Thank you most sincerely, Chair, for the opportunity to talk about the work we've done, to represent the team that I lead here at the Office of the AG in this way. And I want to thank your interest in supporting and protecting this institution and that of South Africans. So I want to just thank you for the opportunity and thank you for your continued support as we navigate the hectic environment and as we implement this instrument. And our undertaking, honourable members, is that going forward we will continue to learn from the two phases that we've implemented the MI process on, and find every way to strengthen our machinery and sharpen the tools that we deploy so that we can realise the ambitions associated with this instrument. So that will be it for me, Chair, just to thank you and to wish you well in the coming weeks of the program. Thank you.
Thank you very much, H. Thank you very much, honourable members. Though with sadness we have noted the passing of Isilo Kwazulu this morning, and the news have somewhat reached us with sorrow, and with only that we could say, may his soul, the soul of the Majesty, rest in peace. Thank you very much. The meeting adjourns.